We're going to be talking this morning about six different congregations that were started in the early Christian church in Asia Minor. We know the specific congregations and we know exactly where they were located. And God sent a direct message to each of those congregations. Now, as you read through with me these different references, you will notice it says, tell the angel. That's talking about the pastor of those congregations, the messenger. Angel means messenger. The pastor was to inform the congregation of what the message was. And so God is speaking to these churches through Christ, his son, and giving them a solemn warning in some cases. There's a few statements of praise, and he points out some things were good and worthy of pointing out as being positive. But there were also other things that needed attention. And the one phrase that keeps being repeated in all six of these cases is a phrase at the end of each review. It says, let him who has ears, let him hear. I love that statement. If you have ears on the side of your head, listen and benefit from it. I just think that's one of those phrases that we should hang on to. If you have ears to hear, then listen. Now, I have statistically tried to watch what God is doing with our congregation here at Our Shepherd. I've been watching this now for 44 years. And God was building us up and we were growing for the first 10, 15, 20 years. And I can recall saying, I wonder if we'll ever reach 600 people. Now you have to keep in mind that here at Our Shepherd, something that no other Lutheran church does. As a matter of fact, I don't think, not only in Wisconsin, but I think throughout the entire world, there's no other church that lists its members as we do here at Our Shepherd. We do not have inactive members. Almost every church you talk to, they'll say, well, you know, we have 500 members, we have 600 members, we have 200 members, and you say, well, how many of those are active? Well, they all have inactive membership lists, people that don't go to church, people that don't commune. We don't do that here at Our Shepherd. If you don't worship and you don't commune, then you're not a member. It's that simple. We don't play the game. Now, that certainly does not count or include all the families that go to Florida for 6 months and things like that. Obviously, they're worshiping somewhere when they're not here. We're just talking about people who could worship. They're not sick. They're not out of town. But they choose not to. Well, then don't call yourself a member. I mean, that's ridiculous. Now, we all have, you know, functions we go to, marriages and other things. We're all out of town occasionally. But generally speaking, every 6 months, we remove people that indicate they don't really want to be here. Now, at this present time, in the last 6 months, since the 1st of January, we have two people that are inactive, same family, one mother, one child. Child hasn't been here for a little over 5 months. The mother hasn't been here, so obviously the child isn't here. There's two. So we have in our membership today two inactive people. They will either be removed next month or reactivated, one or the other. It's up to God to let us know what to do in that case. But I'm simply demonstrating when we give you a number, that means active members that are here that are worshiping. Now, the reason that's kind of important for you to understand is that while we're talking about six different congregations here, all over Asia Minor, we have to keep in mind that God has brought about here at Our Shepherd Greendale something that is very unlike Greendale. As a matter of fact, I kind of wish we had a different name instead of Greendale. Most people moving into the area probably think this is a church for Greendale. Well, it is. but it's also a church for the world. Do you know, and I'm talking about active members. I keep repeating that because I know that's not normal. And the average person would think, well, you've probably got people all over that aren't active. No, we don't. We take those people off the membership rolls. We presently, at Our Shepherd, have active members coming from 27 different communities. 27 different communities and towns like, you know, Franklin, New Berlin, Oak Creek. Name communities like that. 27 of those communities have active members from Our Shepherd congregation. That's incredible. There are about 5 or 6 of those families that drive 30 minutes each way, coming and going. There are 2 families here that travel 45 minutes each way, coming and going from worship. All active families. So keep that in mind when we talk about this. I think that's phenomenal. I keep thinking we ought to put an ad in the paper raising the question, why do these people come from this far on a regular basis from 27 different communities? There must be something here at Our Shepherd. They're hearing the Word of God. They see a fellowship here. There are people here who want to be here. Usually that happens. They start an apartment here. And as they mature and grow up and have a family, they begin to look for a first home. They go somewhere on the outer skirts somewhere, buy a home, find there is no church out there where they're really looking and living now, so they keep coming back here. Now, I want to give you a little review of what's been happening. In the last 7 years, the reason it's 7 years is it just turns out that way. We have, at that point, had 603. The highest we ever got was 603 members. That's fantastic. That's more than double the average size of Lutheran churches in America. We have a couple big churches in cities like Milwaukee, Minneapolis, but across the whole United States, that's more than double the size of the average Lutheran church. The average attendance in a Lutheran church is 180 across America. The average attendance here at Our Shepherd is 340. Once again, not quite more than double what the average is. So we are a large parish, even though we don't count inactive members. We're still a very, very large parish. And so with that in mind, for the last 7 years, we've been going down progressively. That's been true everywhere. If you know anything about what's happening in the schools, public schools, the number of children, the adults has stayed virtually the same. But children, fewer and fewer and fewer children. The lowest we got was 529. 529 was the lowest we ever got. And that was 3 months ago, the end of March. Where do you think we are today, 3 months later? God has blessed us in the last 3 months. Today, yesterday, I didn't know we had a new baby. We had a new baby Friday. I didn't know that. We have 566 with the new baby. That's 567. The Matsons had their new child, going to be baptized this afternoon. So with the Matsons' new baby, we have 567. What is that? 529, that's 30, that's 38 people, isn't it? Am I figuring right? 38 new people in 3 months. 38 new people in 3 months. We have at least 10 ready to join more right now in the last 2 weeks. And I'm not even counting the guy that got the raccoon for us. He has a family, 2 teenagers that desperately need the church, to put it the way he did. He said, I've got to lead them back. I've got to come to church. Well, he's not here this morning yet, but he might still be coming. I should give you his name, because if you know him, you need to thank him, because he's really helped our parish tremendously by getting that animal out of there finally. Put a lot of effort, a lot of time, and then the next day I'm back here and I see his vehicle again. I walk over and he's putting the ceiling back up for us. I said, you know, you're really going out of your way. He said, I'm very happy to find a church that needs me. He said, I love doing this for the church. So anyway, counting him, counting some other people that have been visiting. There were some people in the 8 o'clock service. Counting the family. They don't want to join quite yet because they're going through some real crisis yet. And they're holding on to their relationships that they have, but pretty soon they'll be ready to let loose. And he's having heart surgery tomorrow, open heart surgery, not even 50 years old yet, and having open heart surgery. So we're trying to be helpful to that family. There's all kind of people coming our way. Now, the question that we're going to be asking ourselves as we review these congregations, one of the questions will be, how are you involved? Did you bring any of these 37 people in the last 3 months? Now, that's a rhetorical question, because I know those that didn't and those that did. I know who they are. Most of you didn't bring anyone last 3 months. Am I right in saying that? Not neighbors, not friends, not family. Could we say 80% of you? I'm just challenging ourselves here. Why don't we set a goal that by the end of the year, we get back to 600 people? We need to have 604 to break the record of 603. Why can't we do this? If we're averaging over 10 a month, let's keep going to the end of the year and see if we can't get back to 600. Just kind of a little challenge. Open your Bibles to the last book of the Bible. It's called Revelation. On page 1914, way to the back of the Bible, we begin our study of 6 congregations. Now, we want to analyze whether or not, if God was sending a message to our Shepherd Lutheran Church, and he certainly is, whether any of these things would apply to us. And if you have an ear, then please listen, because this is self-evaluation. We start with Ephesus. Page 1914, the first church is Ephesus. Now, the first several verses look pretty good. You've been doing pretty good. You've been persevering. You've been doing this and that. Now we get to verse 4. Yet I hold this against you. You have forgotten your first love. Uh-oh. God saying, you don't love me the way you first did. When you first became a child of mine. You know, we used to call this back in Iowa puppy love. You know, you lose control. You can't stand to be out of the sight of the other person. You know, you ought to always got to be talking with them. And, oh, your whole life centers around that other person. That is the first love. Oh, my goodness, it's such a deep mystery. Teenagers, when they have their first love, my goodness, you'd think they're going crazy. They don't understand anything anymore. They're irrational. That love, God is saying to the church, that congregation, you've lost your first love for me. You're not as enthused as you once were. You're not overwhelmed with my presence in your life the way you once were. You're not treating me as the number one thing in your life the way you once did. Let him who has ears, let him hear. Does that apply to anyone in our congregation? Would people that know you say, well, they were much closer to the Lord when they were confirmed? They were much more committed to reading God's word years ago than they are now. Could God say that about our shepherd Lutheran? There are people here that don't really, they're not too enthused. I've got to tell you, new visitors tell me all the time, I hear it continuously, you have a lot of strong believers, they'll say, in your church. You have a lot of committed people in your church. And I agree with them. Yes, it's certainly true. But let him who has ears, let him hear. Are there some that we would have to say, you know, but there are others that just aren't, they're not on fire. Let's go to the second congregation. The second congregation was at Smyrna. Now, Smyrna, a little bit smaller town. I want you to drop down to verse 10. Do not be afraid of what you are about to suffer. Here was a congregation that was heading for trouble. They were going to be persecuted. You know, you can really find out who's really committed to the Lord during persecution. Every period of persecution during the history of the Christian church has done two things. It has made the Christian church smaller because the artificial members, the fake members, leave. You don't suffer for something that you really don't believe. You know, if you're going with the rest of the family and everyone's kind of taking part in it, well, the minute some suffering comes, they drop out. But the committed ones get stronger. And so the Christian church, during persecution, often grows much, much stronger. That's why most theologians agree there will always be time of persecution, just like they're being warned here. There's going to be somebody telling you, if you keep worshiping the way you are, we're going to destroy you, or we're going to shoot you, or whatever it is. You know, I can remember my father discussing these topics with me. I can remember it very well. And one of the things that I recall is having to picture, my father drew the mental, the emotional picture. What if someone came and challenged you and said, as of now, you cannot worship the true God anymore? Just like the three men in the scriptures that were thrown into the fiery furnace because they refused to bow down to the idol of the king. What would you do? If somebody came in here and said, we've just passed a new law. Not only can't you talk out against the homosexuals, but now you really can't say that your God is the best God anymore. You've got to agree that your God is one of the gods and one of the choices, but he's not the only true one. And any of you that don't like that, we're just going to shoot you. So now you have 10 minutes to figure it out. You can get up and say, well, we don't mind that rule. We never believed it anyway, and you'll leave. Would half of you leave? Do you know that today, positively, we don't doubt this. We know this. We know their names. I've seen their pictures. of families that are being persecuted in prison for only one reason. They have said Jesus is the only true God. And they're put in prison. As soon as you decide to say there are other true gods, we'll let you out. Or would you be that small percentage that would say, I don't care what you do to me. You can put me in prison. You can shoot me. But I will not deny the true God. Nothing you say or do to me will change that. I believe that God is true and I worship him. And you will not change that. That's what martyrdom is. It's going on right now all over the world. Could it happen here in America? You bet it could. Faster than you realize. I think America has no clue as to what's coming. We're on the way down, and that's not unpatriotic. God had better light up a few other pastors around this country to warn their people, we are going to see persecution. Of course we are. It's coming. It's right around the corner. The first thing will be you can't talk out against homosexuality or any other sin, divorce, whatever. You can't say those things anymore because you're being judgmental and you're being critical. When you say others are going to hell, you can't do that anymore. In America, we have free liberties. We can kill babies. We can do anything we please. That time is coming to America. So this warning is given to this congregation. You just had the warning given to you by your pastor. Let's go to the next congregation, Pergamum. Top of page 1915, Pergamum. Now the situation at Pergamum was very critical because it was clear that Satan existed in Pergamum. You know, there are places, I guess, what would we compare it to today? I really was thinking about that. Maybe Las Vegas? Maybe New Orleans? Do you remember a few years ago when some pastors tried to warn their people that the evil happening in New Orleans was due to the standard of living in New Orleans, the ungodliness? Do you remember that? If God were to look down on America today and say, Satan lives in, what would the name of the city be? I think it could be New Orleans. I think it could be Las Vegas. San Francisco. Would it be Milwaukee? I have never read anywhere or seen anywhere where Milwaukee says, and the center for Christianity and the love of the true God is Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I don't think so. I don't think so. So the people at Pergamum had a built-in problem. Satan was in control there. And now go down to verse 14. What was one of the problems? Sexual immorality. We know biblically the thing that our government and, you know, we're seeing it more and more. It's getting more and more. If you talk out against homosexuality, for instance, just pick one sin, pick one problem. I believe it's going to be impossible 5 years from now for any pastor or teacher to say homosexuality is a sin. As a matter of fact, I'm not sure that they'd permit that right now today. If you were writing a public article or publishing a book, do you think in America today you could say homosexuality is evil and against the will of God? Could you say that today? I don't think you could. That was the problem that the people were facing there. And so he's warning us today in our congregation, keep your eyes open what's happening here at our shepherd and with this congregation. Let's go on to the next one. The next congregation that he sends a message to is Thyatira, top of page 1915. Thyatira, follow me all the way down to verse 23. I am he who searches hearts and minds, and I will repay each of you according to your deeds. Boy, that's something we don't talk much about. Being repaid according to your deeds. You know, we have such a strong emphasis on the fact that you cannot earn forgiveness, you cannot earn salvation, that sometimes we Christians say, well, then why worry about it? Why do anything? Why become mature? That would be just like parents that say, they don't want to over-educate in the Christian faith. Let's not build up such a faith in our children that they become strong and committed to the Lord. They don't have to go to Sunday school if they go to parochial school. My goodness, you don't want to become a fanatic, do you? And have them think that they have to do, you know, that read the Bible every day? How do you encourage growth and maturity when so many people are just complacent? Maybe that's a good word, complacent. This congregation was doing a number of things right, and God commends them. Says you're remaining faithful. You're hanging in there. In this case, they had been persecuted, but they made it through. They were hanging in there. And yet, they have this problem. They don't realize that God is going to produce the crop that they sow. Do you see this as a biblical truth? It's very true, and it should be clear to anyone. If you plant corn, you can't go out and harvest wheat. You get what you plant. You plant corn, you harvest corn. You know, there's something, and by the way, think of stewardship just for a minute here. Think of money just for a minute here. The Bible says not only is it a truism that when you plant corn, you get corn. When you plant wheat, you get wheat. You see the point. If you plant hatred, if there is hatred in your home and your children are growing up and they see hatred and cursing and swearing in the home, you're going to produce in those children hatred. Maybe it's envy, maybe it's jealousy. Whatever they see, whatever you're planting, that's what's going to grow. I said stewardship for a minute. Listen to this truism. You plant 3 ears of corn, you're going to have a crop of 3 ears, not 150. This is biblical. If you're a lousy giver, God says, I will use the same measure, the same cup, same measuring cup that you're using. You want to treat me with an ounce here or there? I will give back to you an ounce here or there. That's biblical. Now, he's reminding that congregation, you don't seem to understand. You think You can plant something like hatred and evil and jealousy and sexual immorality and somehow still reap all my blessings. He said it doesn't work that way. You plant hatred and evil, you will reap hatred and evil. You plant mercy and goodness and love and joy, that's what you will harvest in your life. Boy, is this I just repeat, if you have ears on the side of your head, listen. Listen, if you have an ear to hear, listen. That's such a solemn warning. You will get what you sow. Haven't you learned that in your life? I think of children lying, for instance. If you lie around your house lying, telling untruths, that's what you're going to harvest. Every kid lies. There's no question about that as they're growing up. 2 years old, 2.5 years old, 3 years. Every kid's going to lie. That's part of their sinful human nature. The trick is to figure out when they're lying and correct them and try to keep them, teach them to tell the truth. You're going to get whatever you sow. Let's go to the next congregation. The next congregation is Sardis. Now, Sardis, go down to verse 2, very simply. Sardis, I think of this. Whenever new people come into the area and they visit here, if they're looking around for other churches, I've been telling the people at Ebenezer this. They're looking at all the Lutheran churches in the area because their church is closed. And so I try to help them out. I said, I'll tell you a little bit about each of the parishes. I've been around here 44 years. Talk about Hales Corners. You talk about Our Fathers. Talk about Zion. You can talk about all these churches. And I get to a certain one here where, quite frankly, I don't think anything is happening there the last 30 years. Nothing. You don't hear anything. There's no joy coming from there. There's no deep sorrow coming from there. It's just simply there. I like this, where it says here to Sardis, wake up, wake up, wake up. Yoo-hoo, wake up. Doesn't that help if you have ears to hear? Have you just been kind of sleepy, kind of there? 20% of the people doing 80% of the work. I often wonder about that other 80%. Don't they ever think, you know, we should try to do something? Whatever it might be. Wake up, wake up, wake up. Let's go to the next congregation. Philadelphia. Philadelphia. Verse 10 says, you have kept my command. You have endured patiently. I will also keep you from the hour of trial that is going to come upon the whole world to test those who live on the earth. I am coming soon. Hold on to what you have. I believe the Christian activity of an individual Christian depends a lot on whether or not they expect the Lord to return. I love Luther. When he was asked, he said, if you knew Judgment Day was tomorrow, what would you do tomorrow? He said, I would plant a cherry tree. Because that's what he was going to do the next day, plant a cherry tree. He said, nothing would shock me or in any way cause me to change what I'm going to do, because every day I believe the Lord could come. Every single day. Now, if you don't believe that and you think it's all just kind of a mystery, he's never really going to return. We just kind of use that to get people excited. If you don't really think he's coming today, for instance, wouldn't that kind of change what you're going to do today? I remember talking to a youth group. 30 years ago, I was lecturing to a large group of teenagers. And I said, do you think Jesus Christ could come tonight, while you're here at this retreat, Do you know it caused such an alarm as the kids started to think about that, they all ran to the phones out in the hallway to call home. I need to ask Dad's forgiveness. I need to talk to Mom. When they started to realize, you know, God could come tonight. What do I need to get done tonight before God comes? A lot of people don't seem to think about that. They don't think it could come now, today. Well, we finally make it to the last congregation. It was in the town of Laodicea. Laodicea. Now, here is one that is really something. He says to that church, some of you are, you're just kind of lukewarm. You're not hot, you're not cold. You're not on fire. You're not unbelievers either. You're not stone cold. You're just somewhere in between lukewarm. And then see what he says. I will spit you out of my mouth. I don't like lukewarm things. Where are you at? God tastes each of us. What does he find? In the last 2 weeks, I know that I've spent an average of 3 to 3.5 to 4 hours a day on the phone talking with members about drugs, about teenagers, about divorce, about immorality. One person said, I'm doing everything I know I shouldn't do. Not talking about a teenager, an adult. I'm committing adultery. I'm using drugs. I'm being unfaithful to my husband, and while I'm being unfaithful, I'm having another side affair, even with another man. I know God doesn't approve of this. I know God doesn't want this, and neither do I, but yet I do it. Does that sound like anybody in the Bible? Does that sound a little bit like the Apostle Paul when he said, the good things I want to do, I don't do, and the things that I don't want to do, I end up doing? Doesn't it cry and scream out for a simple question? Who is in control of your mind? If you say you don't want to do this, yet you do, what does that mean? You can't control your mind. You can't do what you want to do. What is the power that is keeping you from doing this? Do you begin to see why spiritual maturity is so important? Do you begin to see why you must be strong in the Lord and not wishy-washy or asleep or lukewarm like all these warnings are? We are living in very important times, folks, where God expects his people to be strong and diligent and at work for the kingdom. Extremely important. The evil world surrounds us, and it can overwhelm us if we're not truly committed to the Lord. This is a perfect examination for every one of us to analyze and see just where are we in God's eyes. Is God saying, good for you, church at Laodicea, church at Philippi, church at Sardis, whatever congregation you want to read about there, good for you, the people at Our Shepherd. And where do you fall in all this? Every person that I have observed here this morning, I have seen in every case, each of you has two ears. Everybody. Some people think ears are ugly. They use their hair to cover it. I'd say what? 80% of the women cover their ears, don't they? Yeah. They are kind of ugly. I find them